Welcome to the American Hard Enduro Podcast.
Hey guys, Drew Kirby here with American Hard Enduro, doing something a little different today. We've got Will on the line and we've got Catherine from the Leaky Mushroom Moto Ranch. How's everybody doing?
Hello, woohoo, we're doing swell.
What's going on, guys?
Sorry, Catherine. So we've got you on. You guys are traveling from California to, I think, actually Tennessee. The first thing we kind of want to talk about, I want to know what Leaky Mushroom Moto Ranch is.
Yeah, so it's kind of a hard question to answer. For the most part, we do, a lot of people know us for our clinics. So we teach a lot of dirt bike coaching. We work with a lot of beginners all the way up to hard enduro enthusiasts, but we also provide like motorsports marketing services to racers and help people kind of understand the secrets behind sponsorship. If you're not like the top dog of everything, we help with being able to market yourself, not so much as a winner. So,
okay. So maybe that would apply to more than just your top 10 guys that are actually have a chance at winning.
Yeah. We really focus on like building characters and being able to tell your story and be authentically you and like work with where you're at, what you want to do. You don't even have to race to get paid or be sponsored or any of that jazz. So that's kind of what we help with.
All right. Well, let's dive into that a little bit later. So the reason we're having you on is I had never heard of you guys before. And then you put out a little Instagram thing with Tyler Mull from Battle of the Goats, Brushy Mountain Motorsports Complex. And you guys are the title sponsor of Battle of the Goats this year.
Yeah, we are. It's fun. We're excited about it. We've been trying to give back to the community for a while now. It's one of our goals. So we're really stoked to be able to help out with that kind of stuff.
Okay, so how did you, being from the West Coast, how did you get hooked up with Tyler and the guys at Brushy Mountain?
So I actually came from the Midwest. So Leaky Mushroom started in Minnesota. And I have a friend, his name is Zach Phillips. He works with Carolina Dirt Bike Rentals. And I was his sponsorship coach. And he wanted me to come down and help him with a ride event. He calls it MOVE. It's like Moto Off-Road Veteran Experience, basically. Okay. And he hosted that at Battle of the Goats. He hosted that at Brushy Mountain. And there we met Zach and Tyler, who run Brushy. And one of the conversations that just came up was that they were looking for a title sponsor. And that was right when Nick and I began collaborating on Leaky Mushroom, and we thought it would be a really great way to help out the sport and help out people that have been helping us. So that was something that we were really excited about.
Well, since you've been to the property, and obviously you worked with Zach over there, what did you think of it? Did you get to explore much and see any of what it has to offer?
Yeah, I mean, I think the place is incredible. I know that Nick really likes it out there too, and so does Sam. The whole crew thinks it's great, and it really reminds me, the first time I rolled in, I thought to myself that it looks exactly like what Panama, like the country of Panama looks like when you go to ride it. It's got the red clay and the viney jungles. It was such a cool, surreal experience to kind of roll into Brushy for the first time and see everything. Everybody makes fun of me because the first thing I do is like, look at that vine over there. And it's just
so green.
One big vine. Yeah, it's a really cool place. And I mean, you could spend years there and still not have ridden everything there is to ride and find new lines. It's an incredible place for sure.
Yeah, Tyler's always finding a new creek to play in and to make a super difficult section in, so we like that.
Yeah, Tyler's a hoot. He's a riot to hang out with. If you ever get the chance to, you should definitely hang out with him.
Oh yeah.
Well, so speaking of that, I actually talked to Tyler this morning, and he's a little under the weather, gave me a little heads up. They've added some little bit of new stuff. The course, I think, is going to be roughly the same this year as it was in years past, with some added new hard stuff. He is making lap one on Sunday a little easier. And then lap two, I think, is what he's going to, kind of similar to what Tough Like Roar does, throw everything at him.
Yeah. When we talked about it, he definitely made a point to say that he was really gearing Battle of the Goats more towards the enthusiast rather than while still giving the experts and the pros the challenge that they need. And that would, towards the end, to help break everything up and give everybody like a true shot at the hard enduro instead of being stuck at the first bottleneck right off the gate. So I thought that was really cool that he's doing that, because it definitely makes it more approachable for people like me who are kind of dabbling in it.
And I know last year I didn't race it. Will, you raced it. Man, the bottlenecks were pretty bad that first Saturday race, weren't they?
Well, it's just like every hard enduro. I feel like Battle of the Goats is even more subject to what the weather wants the event to be like. So if the weather says it's going to be hard, it's going to be hard. And based on what we're seeing right now, it's wet. So hopefully over the next couple of weeks won't be so wet.
Yeah, no. All right, so we talked about Battle of the Goats a little bit. I'm excited. We've got, I think, the Moab Hard Enduros this weekend, then we got a couple of weeks to Battle of the Goats. So what are you doing headed across the country to, I think, Tennessee?
Yeah, we're headed to Tennessee, Chattanooga, Tennessee, to do we've got two different types of clinics going on. So the first weekend we're in Chattanooga, we're doing a two-day enduro camp, focused a lot more towards the kind of dabblers and the enthusiasts where they're crossing their, like, intermediate enduro terrain, just thinking that they're riding hard enduro but haven't experienced real hard enduro yet. They're kind of right in that tween stage is our enduro camp. And then the next weekend we have a ladies only day where the significant others get their own included trail ride. So like if you have to go, if you're a lady who's a little concerned about loading up your bike by yourself or any of that stuff, your significant other can come along, but then they have something else to do, which is one of the things that we're really happy that we can provide. And then we've got level one, which we kind of call like our trail riding foundations, but everybody could benefit from it. I know Nick is really passionate about, even when he does the hard enduro days, like he still says all of the students that do the level three hard enduro, they go out and ride Chicken Fight for Battle of the Goats or Graham's Creek, all of that stuff. He says they could still benefit from showing up to level one and drilling those basics and the foundations that we give you, because they apply so much in all the levels, from level one, level two, and level three. So it's just kind of our approach to them changes based off of the class.
All right, so you're doing that in Chattanooga, and then from there, what's next? Are you going on to Battle of the Goats, or have you got some other clinics going on?
Yeah, well, we've got a full tour going on. So we go from Chattanooga, 2 weeks in Chattanooga, and then we show up to Battle of the Goats. And then after Battle of the Goats, we actually have a clinic in Arkansas, and then back to Brushy, and then we go up to Kairos, and then we're doing a Midwest loop. So then we're in Minnesota, South Dakota, doing a tour in the Black Hills, North Dakota, Montana, and then we come back to the east for TKO, and then we shoot back across back to California, where we set up for the East Coast over the winter, for the West Coast over the winter.
Wow, so you're going to be gone, through August, through the whole summer then?
Yep, we're on tour all the way through August.
Oh, wow. That sounds like fun. So when you're going up to Kairos, you mentioned that, is that going to be part of in collaboration with the U.S. Hard Enduro that's up there, or is it just totally separate event?
No, they're totally separate. We kind of wanted to follow the circuit just a little bit, but we didn't want to cross lines. We just found out that Max Gerson's doing some clinics, so we didn't want to step on any toes or anything. We wanted to make sure that he has his own space. So we're doing the clinics the week after the River Monster Enduro.
Okay.
Yeah, but we did that so that the lines would still be set up. We asked permission from the landowner that we could actually use the hard enduro course as part of our clinics, so that we can talk about how to best to approach things like bottlenecks and picking lines. And we workshop a lot of the stuff that you would see in hard enduro races at those locations.
All right. So for anyone listening, whether it's the actual listener or maybe a spouse, what would what makes y'all's clinics different from, like you mentioned, Max's clinics?
We really focus on the context of the situation. I think I just made a post about this and we've been talking about it for a while, but the context is really important. So a lot of times we hear just simple phrases like, for example, you have to keep your weight up front in order to go uphill. So like you have to be at the front of the bike in order to go uphill. But there's so much context around that's missing. Like people hear, I got to get my weight forward in order to go up, that's the only way that they can go uphill for the rest of their lives. And it's more so about like learning that's the basics. And then we teach you the basics and we take you out on the trail so that we can show you how to move through the rules that are in place. So how to make them flexible, learn how to interpret and read and stuff like that. And just kind of like make it an art form, make it a dance instead of such a rigid structure. You need to be fluid with the bike. So we really try and emphasize moving on the bike.
Okay. How big are the classes? Like, you know, coach to student ratios. I'm sure it varies, but what's the ideal, you know, size for you guys?
We don't like any more than four students to a coach. So, Okay. So that's something that we kind of have going for us. We have a media person. We have Angel who comes with us. She might be going out to Maine for 3 months. It depends on how the season kind of pans out. But so she's our media. So she's going to be with us for this first month for sure. And then it's Nick and I for sure. And then anytime we get over eight students, we fly Sam out. So then we have a third coach to accommodate up to 10 students.
Oh, very cool.
That is nice.
Will, you got any questions about clinics or anything, Will?
When as soon as you said Kairos and the course there, I thought about last year when I spent about 30 minutes off the trail trying to recover my motorcycle. So, there's a beautiful opportunity to teach a little bit of motorcycle recovery skills on a severe off camber. So if that's not something in your class, it might have to, you know, work that in there. Nice. Boy, that place is steep.
Yeah, it's good though. That's good.
Uh-oh.
I was worried about this.
Give Come it a back. Second.
Yeah, that's what
it's just getting to good, too. She's getting it this month.
Yep, and now we're gone. I was like, I when I was out west, my service was not great when I was driving through.
Where I was hoping we'd get 20 minutes of good. Yep. But, so what's going on, Drew? We'll just keep going with this.
Well, I'm like, look, see these? See,
oh,
look
my good. God, you can stretch it out, baby.
Range of motion, the shoulder's coming back. Therapy, they're saying I'm getting close, so I'm getting my hopes up. So yeah. I want a good ride. You, what's going on with you? I know you got to tell everyone what's going on with your bike. So all of a sudden, you're 2023. What happened to that thing?
I probably was just bragging to somebody, maybe Tyler Moll, about how I've never had an issue with a TPI. How many have we had now? Like starting in 21 or 20?
Yeah, 21 we ordered. We got three. And then we got
21, 22, and 23.
We've had seven between us.
This is my third one.
Yeah.
And it had 92 hours. Not a plug, nothing. So good. So I found a plug and I had a big backfire randomly. I was on the trail. I was riding by myself. Luckily, it started back up. I got back to the truck. It was running real funky. So I tried like messing with the air screw, got it to do a little better. Then got back to the truck. I think I went to load it up and it wouldn't start. So I actually had to push it up in the van. Never do that. Just got it home.
There we go.
Oh, she's back.
All right. Sorry, Catherine, hold on. Will. okay. Well, you just froze up. So Will's telling us he was having some trouble with a 2023 TPI. So Will, finish telling this story and then we'll
all right,
get back
I'll
to
finish
Catherine.
The story. Fist pumping. So the, like I said, it fouled a plug, went, you know, washed the bike, changed the plug. Obviously it's not super easy to change a TPI plug. And then started up, seemed fine, ran it again, went for a ride and actually stuck an extra plug in my hydration pack. Well, sure enough, halfway through the ride, fouled a plug, you know, went through the process. This happened like two rides in a row. So I was talking to, you know, everybody I knew about it and went to
I was
super,
convinced it was crankcase pressure sensor, the way it was acting. But
yeah, and I thought I was going to be pissed off like Tyler Moll and everybody else that's had the TPI issues. But I talked to Super Dave, Dave Ferris at Sport Cycle KTM in Maryville, give him a big plug. And Dave was like, it's your top end. He's like, I know it's your top end.
It's going, he said compression. You got
it's compression. It's leaning out or it thinks it's leaned out and it's forcing more oil in. And so I was checking the plugs and they were very oily. So, okay, I'll let you do a compression check. He checked the compression. It was basically 60 PSI low. So I'm like, all right, put a top end in it. I mean, let's see what happens. So he said, oh, it's definitely, you know, you've definitely sucked some dirt past the air filter at some point, some dust. So he calls me back the next day. He's like, I got your bike ready. He's like, it wasn't dust. It's been running hot. He's like, you got it real hot. So
I don't know how. Don't know.
Yeah. He's like, have you ever gotten stuck in a hole or anything? I'm like, yeah, for sure. So anyways, he showed me the piston. It was black. And, you know, the rings look good, but the actual piston was black. Put it back together, you know, I really haven't been on a real ride yet. I've only really rode it in the backyard. I'm supposed to go on a real ride tomorrow or Thursday. So that's the TPI saga right now. So hopefully there's no more to this story.
Well, and what was interesting to me was you don't remember getting it super hot or it boiling over either.
No.
Or your fan not working. I mean, no. I know it's all been hot.
Yeah, and maybe I ran it with too little amount of coolant at some point, and maybe the fan didn't kick on. You don't always know. You know, sometimes you're in those situations, and the fan doesn't run because it's got a stick or something hugging it. But I don't know.
All right, so fingers crossed, TPI's back.
It's back.
So, all right, Catherine, so you were in the middle of mid-fist pump about steep training off-camber recovery at Kairos in Virginia.
Yeah, we have a whole segment about, like, not high-siding off of steep hills. We have a whole, like, Nick's got a whole thing on that, but we also really focus on, like, how to think through situations like that and observe, and we really focus on, like, performance and mindset in those situations, like, what's the best way to get the bike to work for you when it comes to getting unstuck in certain situations? And even how to practice that kind of stuff. So, and really focusing on just like efficient practice. So,
well, like Will said about Brushy Mountain, I think Kairos is even worse. It's steeper and it's a lot more mud and dirt. So if it rains, you'll have all kinds of opportunities to just try to figure out how to get up hills.
You just keep sliding too.
Oh, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. When was that, Will? Was that at the last US Hard Enduro when you fell off the trail? Is that
That was it. That was at that Kairos round.
It wasn't a GPS thing we did.
Man, and it was like right after a 30-minute period where I was just riding really as good as I could ride. And I passed four or five guys. And when I slid off down in that hole, like them and then four or five more got back by me. So it was like, oh, Sam was one of them. And Sam was in a struggle fest. So, oh, well.
Did you end up getting him or did he get you? He won that one.
I think he got me. I did. I spent 30, 40 minutes down in this creek hole. And the bad thing was I was up on the pro line. And I could see the B line down below. So I could have dropped down to the B line and ran the trail backwards and done a big hill that I already done. But I was like, no, I'm gonna make it happen. And I blew myself up.
Oh, you made it happen. All right. So everyone wants to get sponsored, Catherine. I think that's something you kind of alluded to earlier, and you've got some different ways to approach it. Without giving away all the secrets, since you do sponsorship coaching, what's your philosophy and what can we do to hopefully get some help?
Well, I'm a big proponent of like being yourself is how you actually get sponsors. So one of the things that we really focus in on and we hone in on, Nick and I just had a conversation about it yesterday, is like, at some point in your experience, whatever it is that you're doing, is you experienced a problem and you overcame that problem. Whether it's for Nick, when he like posts on Instagram, he's like, I was riding and then I noticed something and I noticed I do it a lot and that helps with this thing. And then I share that tip. So he had a problem, like he was high siding down hills, he had a problem. And then he discovered one day that blipping the throttle in a certain body position drops the back end down and he doesn't high side anymore. So then he shares that tip, and that like ability to problem solve and then want to share that problem that you solved with the world essentially is where sponsors come in. So for me, like my problem doesn't change the world or anything like that. My problem was strictly like how to navigate the enduro space as a female athlete and training as a female athlete. And one of the problems that I was having and I asked my audience was having was they were having problems with painful breakouts. And I don't have the time, energy, or effort to figure out how to deal with breakouts. So I went to a skincare company and I said, hey, my audience of female dirt bike riders who are just like me are struggling with breakouts when they ride a lot. Like, would you like to help them solve this problem? And they would say, yeah. And then they pay for it. So it's a matter of like reflecting on yourself, figuring out what your own story is and what problem it is that you experience that you can solve. Like in Zach's case, he's a veteran and he's switched to civilian life and dirt bikes helped him do that. So now he wants to get other veterans on dirt bikes to help them adapt to being out of service.
Well, one thing about Zach, not to change the subject, a little shout out to him because he's reached out and we plugged some of his stuff, and he's got Carolina Dirt Bike Rentals, right?
Yep.
Is that it?
Yep. Yes, it is.
And so if anyone is coming to Battle of the Goats and you need a bike, either Chris Davis at Hocking Hills Bike Rentals, or I think Zach's got some bikes available as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and we really just focus on, like, developing your audience because everybody's really focused on this whole, like, we need a big social media following in order to get sponsored. Like, companies say we need 100,000 followers before they'll even consider sending us free product. And the thing is like, quality audience is way more important than the quantity of your audience. If you have 10 really diehard fans, they can do way more for you and your sponsors than 100,000 people who aren't listening ever could. And I think that that's important. So we focus on, like, building a quality audience, being able to tell your story and share it.
So when you talk about a quality audience, are you talking about interactions on, you know, Instagram or whatnot? Are you talking about people that message you?
No, I'm talking about like diehard fans, the people who go crazy to know you. And I was like, we've all got somebody, even if we don't know we have them yet, there's always somebody out there, whether it's a small kid, it could be like your godchild, it could be a friend that you met online. Somebody is following you online, kind of to a stalker level, but it's nice, where they're like, yes, like, I'm so excited you did this, or thank you for sharing that, like, I really needed this. And it's you're talking to yourself 5 years ago, essentially, and you're helping somebody, like, reach the level that you're at now, and those people are so grateful, so thankful, and they share that passion with you that they follow you and they want to support you because people root for people they love. But it might not be for everyone. So
and one thing you said, we had a conversation, I don't know, it's been a month ago, and you kind of told me what you guys were doing and what you're about. Is one thing you haven't mentioned about the sponsorship was, if you're like a tattoo guy and you like tattoos, maybe go to a tattoo parlor and try to get their support. Or I can't remember the other example you used, but that kind of stuck out to me, that, like, know your audience and approach someone you might represent.
Yeah, absolutely. And that comes from that whole, like, if you're helping yourself 5 years ago. So the example you're talking about, his name is Jake Rayberger. He runs a youth racing program called the Jacks of Spade. And he's a really cool guy. He's got, like, the full stand-up colored mohawk. He's got the cut-off sleeve shirt.
Oh, no. We've lost her. Hey, it's back to us, Will.
So, you want to hear about my weekend?
Where's your weekend? Oh, yeah, you were racing downhill.
Yeah, I didn't race. I was.
You were. Oh, you back?
Is she back?
Nope.
We can't hear you, Catherine.
Yeah, you're frozen. Hey, no. So you were in a downhill race in Asheville. What, Ride Rock Creek?
Yeah, Ride Rock Creek at Zirconia, North Carolina, and my son, who's 14, who we probably need to talk to Catherine about.
Yeah,
helping him with sponsorships. But he's actually on a new frame. One of our friends, Sean Leader, is building a new bike. So he's built Bryson specifically an extra small bike since he's an extra small kid. But anyways, he's racing over there, and Josh Hill. And
this is what I was going to talk about. Yeah.
Another supercrosser, Cade Clayson. He was there.
Yeah.
So those guys were racing downhill this weekend. So it was really cool to see that. And Josh Hill had his Stark Varg ripping laps on Friday night. And the downhill people love supercross guys. It's like the perfect crossover. But there's this huge, like, double-double that some people can do a triple-single on. And Josh Hill did a quad on the dirt bike. So now all the downhill pros are like, oh, so quad is possible. So they're all talking about pulling for it, but
you just need a 60 horsepower engine under you to clear it. That's it.
But well, dude, those fast guys, I think they could do it. I think they could pull for the quad.
Was that the same race where Josh Toth? Okay, yeah. Was there, because the video looked super similar when I was watching it.
Yeah, and Josh last year I talked to him and he was like, man, I really regret not pulling for that quad on the dirt bike. But
I haven't seen, have you seen the video of Josh doing it? Because the video I saw, I didn't see anything like that.
Yeah, I can. I'll throw it on. I'll try to throw it on our Instagram, share it from. Okay. I know Ride Rock Creek put it on their page. Okay. And if you don't know where it is, you probably wouldn't even know it's a quad. It doesn't look that huge for a dirt bike, but if you know what the jump is in person, it's very impressive.
All right. Catherine, are you back? You're glitchy and you're not as clear, but can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Sweet. Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Yes. Your mouth and your noise is not lined up, so maybe it'll come back.
Okay. Well, I guess for the example for Jake, it's just a matter of, like, he should be going to tattoo parlors and breweries and those kind of, like, punk rockery band or brands like Hot Topic and stuff like that. But the other example that I used was, his name is Jesse Cameron, and he goes, Catherine, how's an old geezer like me who only wants discounts, runs a bike from 2001 and doesn't buy anything new ever? How am I supposed to get sponsored? And one of the questions I asked him is, like, if your bike is out of production, who makes your parts? Is it a CNC shop? Like motorcycle museums, vintage brands, like bike builders? And it's just, it is about understanding your audience and like what it is that you're trying to do. And it takes a lot of work. It does, but it's not for everyone. So if you're not like ready to kind of batten down the hatches a little bit and really make it happen, then it's not necessarily for you. If you only want to get paid to win, then what I teach as far as sponsorship goes doesn't work. But if you really want to help and give back to your community and like grow the community as a whole, that's what we really focus on doing, is building partnerships to grow the industry in general.
Okay. All right. So the last thing I've got in my notes, and you're going to have to help with this, is it's you guys are releasing a book you've done at Battle of the Goats. Does that sound, help me out with that one.
Yeah, we're waiting on the chief marketing officer of Sherco USA to write the foreword, but the whole rest of the book is ready. It's ready to go to print. It should only take 4 days to print, so we're really excited about it. And it's basically everything I ever taught in my group coaching program for sponsorships, I put in this book. I asked all of the students that I've helped that have done well, like, what were the biggest breakthroughs for you when it came to sponsorship? And I've now have 20 sponsorship secrets is what I call them, are inside of this book. And it's called Don't Say Sponsorship, because the whole premise is like, sponsorship has changed. It's not what it is, what it used to be anymore. And it's not just about logos and exposure. So we're changing what it means to be sponsored in the industry to pay individual racers. Dang it. So the individual racers have the funds. Sorry, you guys disappeared, and I thought I got cut out.
Yeah, you're so coming. You're microwaving real bad. This New Mexico is not ideal, I guess, to drive and do a video.
Oh,
now
man.
We got a bunch of wind noise.
Wind noise. Interesting.
Yeah, it was. Okay. I don't know if it got in front of your air vent or.
Just out of curiosity, since y'all are doing a loop of the U.S. pretty much, what are y'all driving? What's your setup there?
We're in a Toyota Tundra, and we've got a toy hauler in the back.
Okay. How big of a toy hauler is it?
16 feet.
Yeah, it's... Okay. Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, 16 feet.
So y'all are stealth.
Yeah.
Really?
That's home base for the entire thing? Are you hoteling it at all, or is it all toy hauler life?
Nope, it's all toy hauler, and then we're just visiting my family in Minnesota for a little bit.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to ask, since you guys have done some coaching, Will and I both have sons that are about the same age. They're both on CRF 125s. They're getting to the point where they're outperforming the bike, or the bike's not keeping up, or it's not good enough. What would you guys, in your opinion, say would be a next good bike for a, 13, 14-year-old kid, 5'2", 5'3"? You got any good thoughts or advice?
Motocross or off-road?
No, wood, no, woods, all woods.
Definitely off-road.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a friend in California that rides a motocross 125 that he's kind of adapted for off-road, and he does some pretty amazing things on it. He's not, he's not like the most outstanding rider in the world, but he makes it up a lot of crazy stuff that we do. So, I mean, it might be harder for him, but it just depends on how big they are, too, and what they can handle. And, you know, I mean, it's hard to go wrong with the modern Austrian two-strokes, in my opinion. Yeah. But, of course, Beta, the X-Trainer, is really good, too. Like, Catherine has an X-Trainer, and I think that's an amazing, miraculous bike, honestly. There's some quirky things about it mechanically, you know, there's some cheap stuff on it, kind of, you know, but the mortar and the geometry is really, really awesome.
Okay. So thanks, Zach. And that was a question I hadn't even asked. What are you guys riding? So Catherine, sounds like you're on the X Trainer.
Yeah. I've built my X Trainer to basically be a 200 RR without the top end. So that's been a really cool bike.
Oh, start over. We lost you there.
Nick's on a gas 300 EC.
Okay.
Nice.
What, Catherine, have you lowered that Beta, or is it, how tall are you and does it work for you? Son of a biscuit. Oh, you back, Catherine?
Yeah, I figured maybe if I cut my video, it will be better.
Okay, yeah, let's try that. So, have you lowered that bike, or is it standard height?
No, I kept the Beta stock. It's just got a cut seat. That's it. So it's got the cut seat, and then it's got the pipe. It's got an FMF fatty.
Yep.
FMF fatty. We cut out the airbox. We changed the jetting. And we put a 9mm clutch on it, and it's been a monster. It's really opened it up a lot as far as its ability to build power and tackle some of the harder stuff.
Yeah, the power on that thing is so friendly.
Nice.
Is it a 250?
It's a 300.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't realize. So just got a detuned 300.
Yep. It's a detuned 300 that we put power back into, basically.
Okay. Well, and that's what Will and I had the same conversation yesterday. It's the only reason I ask is I was, we kind of came to the conclusion like a 150 XCW possibly lowered might be the best bet. It still has e-start.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's a great idea. I've always wondered about the 150s. I've heard different things. Like my friend who has the 125, he claims that he likes the 125 more than the 150. And I thought that was kind of odd, but he gave me some reasons for it. I can't really remember, but I honestly, if you're a young kid, I mean, I think you'd be pretty happy on either 125 or 150. Like it's not dangerous. It's not like stupidly dangerous power, you know, and you could maybe mess around with flywheel weights and gearing and stuff and make it pretty awesome actually. But yeah, the XCW like 150 would probably be pretty, or 125 or 150 would be pretty awesome, I think.
Okay, yeah, that's what. And if I can get one new enough, most of the parts will match up, cross over. So that was the other thing I was thinking. I'm gonna have a bunch of parts laying around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for you have a KTM as well?
Yeah. Yeah. We both are on 300 XCWs.
I think that helps. That's one nice thing about the Austrian bikes is like there's such a huge community of. You know, they have their problems as well, right? But there's such a community and like big, you know, so much resources to like fix stuff and there's parts and stuff. Whereas Beta, as much as I want to root for Beta and Sherco, it can be kind of a challenge to, you know, like the clutches on the Shercos and just different things, you know. Whereas the KTMs, there's more, like you said, there's more common ground between the bikes.
Well, you can go through the pits and find about any part you need for a KTM at most hard enduros anyway.
Yep, exactly.
So, all right. Cool. Well, you guys got anything else you want to tell everyone before we wrap this up?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I guess just you can check out all of our stuff at leakymushroom.com. We have a clinic tab, a sponsorship tab.
And we just did an online course.
We did just do an online course. Dang, Nick's nice. Throwing it out there. Yeah, we just launched that. It's basically everything you'll ever get from us in person. And we highly recommend before you take our clinics that you actually enroll for the first 15 days free to check out the online course, because everything we teach in the online course, we do in the clinics. And it just helps kind of prepare you for the clinics, if you will.
Okay. All right. Will, you got anything else?
I guess sign up for Battle of the Ghosts is open now. So I know there there had been some questions about that. So go to ushardenduro.com, click on the registration link, and it'll take you there. And it's, you know, I think you have to apply for a number now, which was a little different than in the past. But hopefully everybody's already got that. So just get signed up.
I'll say, if they're listening to this, they probably have.
Yeah, they probably already got signed up. I just now got my number, so.
Hey. Oh, did you get a number? What number did you get?
I don't know. It was a pretty high number. So,
oh, really? We'll see. They didn't have your number. All right.
Might have been 227.
No, there we go. There we go.
I was will you guys
Nat-
say What's that, that again,
Zach.
Will you guys be there?
I am 90% in. My son is racing at Massanutten in Virginia that weekend, and I think I'm just going to let him go with his team. And if I can do like a 3-week boot camp for myself and get myself into shape, then I'll be there. Otherwise, I'm going to lay out. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay, cool.
I'll be there running around. I'm not cleared to ride / race yet. So I'll be on a bike, easing around, checking things out. For sure.
Cool. Great.
Awesome. Well, I'm stoked to see you guys there, and really sorry about the scheduling and the reception. That was totally on me. So
I think we made it work. We filled in the gaps. We had some other stuff going on.
Well, and it was weird. We were getting, I don't know if you could hear it, Will and I were having feedback with on our mics. You sounded clear, but we were a little glitchy. So hopefully that cleared it up. It sounds better now.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having us. We really, really appreciate it. And we're super stoked to meet you guys.
All right, guys. Hey, Catherine and Zach, thank you for your time. And we'll see you guys at Battle of the Goats.
All right.
Bye. See you guys soon.
See y'all.
Later.